This is episode 421, dated Friday, July 18th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Great to be here with all of you today. This is episode 421. Dated Friday, July 18th, 2025. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend and co-host and colleague, Peter O'Toole. Peter, what's happening?
Not much. Beautiful weather in Coos Bay. 65 degrees, little breeze, sun's out. It's been great summer so far, and hopefully it'll keep on being great.
All right. And here in New England, especially southern New England right now, it's sunny and dry and about 80 to 85 degrees. No humidity today for a change. Before we continue, allow me to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you very much for what you do. I also extend the same thanks to our media sources for airing us. Thank you. And of course, Jacqueline Sylvia. From JS Web Solutions, thank you so much for archiving our shows on my website. In order for people to find the archives, they should go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and the archives of most of our past episodes will be seen.
Merci, Jackie.
I also want to say hi to a faithful listener, Linda McKinney-Lambert. Thank you very much for listening to our program. It is much appreciated. And also let me thank Trish for being our facilitator today. I want to say hi to Trish. And also let me say hi to Herbie and to thank him for being our streamer. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's B-O-B. BRANCO93@gmail.com. We're very pleased to have with us the youngest author we've ever had on In Perspective. We've been in existence now for over 8 years, and we have a 15-year-old. You're 15, right, Diana?
Yes, I am.
I would like to welcome Diana Mortazavi. You might be familiar with her father. He's been on our show several times, Jaleel Mortazavi. This is his daughter, Diana. She wrote a book called Crazy Critters. It's a book about centipedes. And I'll tell you, I've always known what a centipede was to a point, but I've never learned more about centipedes in my entire life as I've learned about them recently, thanks to Diana's book. Diana, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
It is a pleasure to be here.
My first question out of curiosity is, what made you decide to write about centipedes?
Oh, well, it's a really long story. So about maybe a little more than a year ago, like a year and a half ago, I started showing interest in centipedes for whatever reason. And at the dinner table, my parents suggested that why don't I make an illustrated book about centipedes? Because, well, I was pretty good at drawing too. So I was like, okay, mom and dad, I'll try my best. I'll write a book about centipedes so I can share some of my random knowledge with them to the world. And the whole process took me about like, so it started in in December of 2023, which means I was about 13 years old. So the whole process started when I was 13, and it got published February of this year. So it took me a little more than a year to get the book published because I took a break in the summer of 24. So it was a really long journey, but I eventually got it done.
Are you interested in biology per se or animal life to begin with?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm interested in biology or animal life that much, but I took a pretty big interest in centipedes to the point where I tried to look for every source I could from the nearest library about them. I went to a museum about them where they had, the Harvard Museum, where they had centipede preserves, I think. So maybe not like biology is cool, but it's not really my forte, but I'm specifically interested in centipedes.
You told us before the show that centipedes don't necessarily have 100 legs because the prefix centi, C-E-N-T-I, stands for 100. And I was always under the impression, although part of me didn't really believe it, because how can any insect have 100 legs? But I figured, well, they call them centipedes, so they probably have 100 legs. But you say that they don't necessarily have them.
Well, yes, because that would theoretically be impossible. So they must have an odd number of legs because they have the two antennae at the front of their head. So they either have more than 100 legs or less than 100 legs, as I said before, but they must have an odd number of legs.
And why centipedes and not, say, lobsters or sardines? Or what fascinates you about that particular animal?
So it's a bit murky because I think I liked them from as far back as like maybe mid to late 23. But I'm pretty sure I just discovered them, and I think I was pretty interested in the mythology behind them in several different cultures. So that's kind of what motivated me to write this book, mostly like the history and cultures associated with.
You talked about being a graphic designer or drawing pictures, and we'll come back to that in a second. But talk about sort of your interest in writing. When did you start getting interested in actual writing stuff?
So I kind of feel like a quasi author, because to me the book feels more like pictures put together with text, because I drew the illustrations on my phone, and the text was just a long document which we managed to put on each page a little blurb of text with an image. So I wasn't really interested in writing. It's just my parents got me into, they suggested I write a children's book, and I was like, okay. So I'm thinking if this could be like the kickstart to my journey as an author, or what I could be writing in the future.
So let's talk about, you're right, there's not a lot of text in the book. You know, it's a sort of lots of interesting information about centipedes. And let's talk about that a little bit. What do you find the most interesting about centipedes, aside from the fact that they do not have 100 legs?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, if I can think from the top of my head, maybe the fact that some of them can regenerate their limbs. And I think some of them are able to even maybe regenerate half of their body, especially the bigger ones. But because they molt and that they have an exoskeleton, they're also able to regenerate some of their limbs, especially if they get bitten off or removed by a predator.
And I always assumed, and clearly I was wrong, that centipedes are insects. They're not insects. They're crustaceans, right? There's a difference.
Well, let me just explain this. So centipedes are arthropods.
Sorry.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. I said the wrong thing, but they're not insects. I thought they were insects and they're not.
Okay. So, insects can be in the arthropod family, but centipedes are not insects. Sorry. I worded that poorly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Peter, crabs are crustaceans, and insects have a certain amount of legs. I think insects have 6 legs, generally speaking, as part of their traits, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I learned in 4th grade. And then somehow I had the idea that, millipedes or centipedes, even though they had more than 100 legs, were insects, which makes no sense at all.
Yes, you both are correct. Insects must have 6 legs. And in millipedes and centipedes, they are both in the family Chelopoda, which is a very unique family, which is basically the trait of having many legs with a long worm-like body.
So the other thing I was interested in, that I remember about the text of the book was the poison that these folks can make. Talk about the poison they can do to, keep them safe from enemies, as it were.
So I'm not trying to be a nerd here, but poison is when something is poisonous when you consume it, but venom is like injected. So in this case, it would be a centipede's venom. If you got to the part in the page of my book, I'm pretty sure I said that some centipedes, stings are painful enough to make a grown man cry on the floor, while some is just a little sting. But it depends on how much of an allergic reaction you will have. I think, it could be fatal to infants. A sting from a centipede could be fatal to infants or elderly people, but in general, they are painful, but most of the time they are luckily not fatal.
I think you used the word yikes when you were describing their venom, for the, the bigger ones that can, I can't remember the words you used precisely, but make, us adult men writhe on the floor with pain.
Have you seen, one of Coyote Peterson's videos?
I have not.
Well, I think he's kind of a daredevil. So I'm pretty sure in one of his videos, he allowed, I think like some sort of desert centipede to bite him. And he literally was, I think he was like moaning and groaning and he was like curled into a ball on the floor. So
why would he allow it?
Cause I think that's his entire career. Like he's out in the wilderness. He makes money off of that, obviously. And he's kind of like, oh, I'm so cool. I let this animal bite me. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, there are some weird people out there who make money doing all kinds of things. And that appears to be one of them. So let's talk about the pictures that you drew. Talk first about, your interest in drawing. How did that happen?
Do you want to hear, the age I started drawing or when I started drawing centipedes?
No, when you started drawing just stuff in general.
I guess my parents kind of said I had a talent for drawing. I think I started like drawing like structured things when I was about 4 or 5. And I kind of just kept on going with it.
And, I think Jay's on the call. This may be sort of a weird question, but Jay, how did you sense, Diana's, interest in drawing since, like me, you're blind?
I know, but the thing is, anything she puts paper on it, and, you know, our friend, of course, my wife Sarah, who happens to be sighted, you know, they just were fascinating, not only us as the parents and her mother, and also the teachers and everybody else. Whenever they saw Diana's drawing at a very young age, everybody was fascinated. They said, gee, this girl knows how to draw. And so we encouraged her, and she kept going.
Of course.
And she's very good at it.
That's terrific. So talk about the drawings you made for this book. Sort of describe a couple of them. How do they tie into the text of the book? Sort of talk about that.
So yeah. I first want to pay homage to the art style that inspired the kind of cute way I drew insects. I tried my best. So I think I took inspiration from the Japanese super flat art style, but it was a bit difficult to draw the insects because, characters drawn in a super flat art style are usually like, cute little, bears and cats and dogs. So I took inspo from the super flat art style. And, I wanted to make, the centipedes and whatever insects I drew a little easier on the eyes because I figured, the average 10 to 12 year old maybe wouldn't like looking at photos of a centipede's mandibles from up close. So I try to make it as cutesy and lighthearted as possible for those who don't like looking at centipedes and insects.
So how do you make mandibles, which I assume are teeth kind of things? How do you make those cute?
So if you flip to the back of my book, you will see on the lower left of it, there's an icon of a centipede with two little things on the side of its head. Those are supposed to be mandibles. I tried my best. You can search a centipede's mandibles in your free time if you will. I don't think I can screen share.
No,
but
that's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of curious. I'm sort of curious, but you said, I can imagine from what I've read about centipedes that they're pretty ugly things, you know, for the average human. But you tried to make them more beautiful. I'm trying to figure out how you did that.
So, yes.
Go ahead.
So I used it. I'm pretty sure I told you I drew them on my phone. and in which I did that with a program called Ibis Paint, and it is a digital drawing app. So I had to take reference photos, like a lot of reference photos, and I put them in the reference window. So I looked at them and I try to make them look as cute as possible while trying to make them anatomically realistic. And I did this by not making them too detailed, with thick lines on the outside for some of them and thinner lines on the places that weren't very important. So I made try to make thick lines on the focal points and thinner lines on the points that weren't important. But I tried to also make the eyes kind of like dots, so it's not like hyper-realistic. And I didn't completely, like 100% accurately draw the mouth, because the mouth is a bit, as you said, ugly too. So I had to make it look a bit unrealistic while keeping the body realistic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've never seen anything. I'm a bit blind since birth, but that does make sense. It's sort of the general idea. Did you try to describe what you were doing to your dad as you were doing it, the pictures?
I don't know, Dad. Did I describe it to you? I was kind of locked in.
Yeah, she did. But of course, my wife described all the details and the whole bit. Yeah, I have a very much picture of it, Peter. Even though I used to see before, so I have seen them before. So when she talks about it, I know exactly where the legs are and all that stuff. Something that I particularly always wanted to kill them, because it's just horrible looking bugs. But Diana made interesting, because she drew the picture and make a human aspect of this centipede than the bug that I used to see. And that's what makes it so interesting.
Diana, what is the length of a full grown centipede, or the diameter, as you know?
It depends from species to species, but I'm assuming you mean like the exotic ones?
Or the average ones.
The average ones. Well, I guess a fully grown, I guess average centipede, the ones you find in your house sometimes, I guess they are about, like a fully grown one is about to, like, it's about 2 inches long. They're very small. The ones that are called house centipedes, Scutigera coleotrata, I hope I said that right. And they are very sneaky. They are very common as well. I think you can find them just about anywhere. I'm pretty sure you've seen one in the nooks and crannies of your home. And for like slightly bigger ones, I guess their adult length would be around 5 to 6 inches. And then the biggest ones are like nearly 1 foot long.
And where are the big ones? I mean, what part of the world are the big ones, the 6 inches, the 12 inches? Where are they usually located?
Oh, yes. So centipedes, they really like dark and damp environments. So they're usually in tropical and subtropical areas of the world, like South America, maybe like Asia, maybe some in Africa too, but mostly like hot places.
And what do centipedes eat?
I'm pretty sure it said this in my book, but yes, they are carnivores. So they eat insects, actually. They eat insects. They are not insects, but they eat them. So, I guess the smaller ones, they will eat like cockroaches, silverfish, flies, if they can get to them. And then the biggest ones, I think one of them has been able to decapitate a mouse, which is pretty disturbing, and maybe even kill birds, frogs, lizards.
Do they really eat those things? I mean, the big ones who can kill the mice and the frogs and the birds and stuff. They eat those things?
Yeah, I know that sounds disturbing, but I think some humans eat those things too. But yes, they do
this
eat those
true.
Things. Yes, it's.
It's funny. Whenever I think I know that centipedes aren't insects, but you know, I think, you know, birds eating insects, right? And you know, now you have some things that sort of appear to be insects actually eating birds. Kind of a weird thing for at least to my warped mind.
It's part of a food chain.
Well, yeah, it is indeed. So, what do you hope will come of this book? What do you hope will, What do you hope people sort of get from this book?
I just want them to know, I think specifically about centipedes, that even if you want to step on them as soon as you see them, that they actually serve a purpose. They may live rent free, but they will kill the bugs in your house as long as you give them a home. And they don't really attack humans. They're actually quite afraid of them, as most little creepy crawly things are. And I think they deserve a second chance. Yeah, they don't deserve to be villainized all the time.
Well, you know, all the insects you said that they eat, cockroaches, we have too many of those. You know, flies, you got too many of those too. And whatever else you said, you know, it strikes me as a very useful, predator for us. So I guess we need to, say, don't kill centipedes. Not a good idea. Like spiders, right? Spiders are also, a lot of people like, you know, are spooked by spiders. And, you know, that we probably shouldn't kill those either. They eat insects and things that are not helpful to us at all.
Mm-hmm.
Deanna, you do have a website that I'm sure people would want to look at because there will likely be interest in purchasing your book. Could you tell us how people can learn more about the book and how to buy it?
So I think there's an official website made by my editor, and then there is Amazon where you just search Crazy Critters and you can buy Crazy Critters there. You can get it, the Kindle version, or you can get it delivered to you.
I want to give your editor a plug because Peter, you, me, and your father all share the same editor. So we all have experience with Leonore Dvorkin. In fact, I'm hoping she's on this call right now. DLD Books is the organization that she runs, Leonore and David. David's her husband. They do editing and they do proofreading, formatting, and the whole nine yards. And they're very, very good people, very, very professional. So I want to give them a plug. And I know that you may have a website, dldbooks.com/your name, Deanna Mortazovi.
You can try that.
How was it working with an editor?
Yeah, well, it was kind of a new experience. I had previous experience with another editor who kind of got me like inspired enough, like who kind of motivated me to start writing it. And I think she was the editor for Scholastic, but then my mom was like, why don't we just use your father's editor to help you get this book done? And I was like, okay, I'll do that. So, yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah, they are good people. They are very good people.
Peter and Bob, and Deanna, this is Leonore.
There she is.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Deanna. I'm sorry I can't see you. Don't see anybody's picture here except Musi, I think your name is. I just wanted to say about the website, you don't have to even put the HTTPS. You can just go to www.dld, that stands for David and Leonore Dvorkin, www.dldbooks.com, and then slash, and then D, just the D for your first name, D Mortazavi, and then another slash. So again, that's www.dldbooks.com/D Mortazavi/, and you'll get to the website. And then it's very important to tell everybody that the whole title of the book is Crazy Critters, and then the subtitle is The World of Centipedes, because there are other books out there, lots of other books called Crazy Critters. So that's not really enough to get to it on Amazon. You have to say Crazy Critters, : The World of Centipedes, and then or put her name, Deanna Mortazavi, can't be too many authors named that. But if you go to the website, that has everything, the picture of the book and about the author and the whole synopsis and everything. And, I wanted to say something about, just the style of the drawing, which I find absolutely wonderful. Deanna, you did such a good job on the pictures. I would call them more cartoon-like than anything else because they are relatively simple in their design, but very colorful. Most of the centipedes' bodies are various shades of gray or brown, and their faces are, the heads are uniformly round. The bodies probably, I assume, are proportional to what they really look like. But the heads are uniformly round and they have a variety of expressions which are very human-like. Like some are smiling, you know, some are frowning, some look self-satisfied, which is all very funny. And yeah, just very, very humorous illustrations, but, you know, anatomically correct as far as the bodies go. And then also she has put some of them in very funny situations. Like in the one page where she says centipedes are mostly nocturnal, she has this gray centipede sitting like with a throw, like a cozy throw over its head. And outside the window, you can see the moon and clouds with curtains in front of the window. And then the centipede is eating popcorn. There's a box of popcorn beside it, you know, presumably watching TV or something. So very funny. And a lot of humor in the book. And so it's just wonderful because it's very humorous, but also very informative. And Deanna, I wanted to write you and ask you, what was the reaction in your school when you first showed the book to your schoolmates?
Well, I think I was like, what? How did my teacher find out about this? So I guess their reactions were fairly positive, but they might have been, I'm pretty sure they were thinking, oh, why did she write about that? But I told them where they could find it and that I'd love for them to order one and leave a review. But I think it was generally positive. I kind of was known for being an artist at school, but maybe that's changing. I don't know. But they generally had a positive reaction, I hope. And some of them left a review and bought my book.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I couldn't imagine that your schoolmates would not be enthusiastic because it's certainly unusual to have a published book at the age of 14 as you were then. So I just think it's marvelous that you did this. And David and I certainly hope that you will do, you know, more books in the future because you definitely have a talent for it. And I just want to tell everybody also that usually David and I put the covers together for the books that we publish. But Deanna did the cover illustration as well. And she combined, let's see, golly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 centipedes and a big spider and an eagle and another bird, which I guess is a blue jay. And she did all that herself, and she chose the font, the letters. That's called bubble style, isn't it, Deanna? The font that you used for the letters?
Yes.
Yeah, bubble style. It's used a lot for cartoon things. So she had a big, big hand in designing the cover as well, and it just came out great. It's just a very cute, amusing, informative book. And it was a real pleasure for us to work on it, Deanna.
Thank you so much. Wow, I don't think I've gotten that many compliments in a minute. Thank you so much.
Well, you certainly deserve them because the whole thing, I mean, just the whole idea was so great and the way you put it together. And certainly I did not know practically anything about centipedes. I mean, of course, I knew what they were, but I didn't know any of these interesting facts about them before I read the book. So I learned a lot too. So thank you very much.
Theodore, thank you so much for describing the pictures. That really was helpful for me and I hope the audience. It sounds like they were really, you know, sort of, as you said, sort of amusing, pictures that, you know, sort of give the centipede some, quirky nature. I've never heard of a centipede being satisfied necessarily, but you know, I don't know why we can't draw a satisfied centipede.
Right. Well, oh, and then she has really funny, you know, cartoon captions sometimes, like, she's showing on page 48, like somebody stepping on a bug that is the food source for the centipede. And the centipede looks very distressed and says, no, my only food source. And there's a shoe stepping on a very juicy bug because it's splattering out all over the place. And then in big letters, she has splat, you know, like above that. So it's, as I say, it's very cartoon like, but accurate. So very well done.
Anyway, thank you. That was wonderful. Those descriptions.
Well, thank you
for that, Leonore. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Leonore.
You're quite welcome.
And the website again is www.dldbooks.com/dmortazavi. And for anybody who doesn't know how to spell Mortazavi, see, this part is important too. It's www.dldbooks.com/dmortazavi. I'm sure there are a few listeners, when they heard the name Mortazavi, they said, how do you spell that? So I thought I would spell it for them. By the way, I thought we'd have a little fun for a minute here. And I'm going to ask a trivia question, and I want those people who are listening to our podcast to, when this podcast is released, or if you're live on the stream, to email me at bobbranco93@gmail.com with the answer to my trivia question. This is going to be fun now. In 1984, there was a pop single on the music charts called Centipede. Who sang it?
Oh, yeah.
That's my question. And for those of you who want to guess, just email me. Don't say it now. You know, email me later if you're listening live, or email me after the podcast is released and you get to listen to it that way. Who sang Centipede? It was a 1984 hit.
It's a good song, too.
Yep. So at this moment, let me take the opportunity to invite our other participants who are listening live to talk with Deanna Mortazavi. You're listening to In Perspective, and Deanna is an author. She wrote Crazy Critters. What was the subtitle, Leonore? Crazy Critters.
The World of Centipedes.
The World of Centipedes. So, Trish, do we have any hands raised at this particular time?
Yes, we do. Deborah? Hello. This has been a great presentation. I unfortunately, I got here late, but if you don't mind me asking, Diana, have you ever had sight at all?
Oh, yes. I'm not blind. My father is, but I am not. Oh. So I took this opportunity to.
Okay. Because there are classes on, showing blind people how to draw. And, so I kind of wondered whether you, had a vision impairment or you were totally blind, but that your book sounds really interesting. And I certainly like the, the sense of humor, and you're talking to somebody who is scared to death of bugs, even though I can't see them. If I hear bees or wasps or anything, I just go freaky. And my dad's, you know, keeps telling me, you know, don't panic and don't take a swat at them, especially a bee or, you know, or a wasp, because they'll be sure to get you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't take a swat. And the other thing he'll tell me is, well, don't look like a flower. So, yeah, don't look like a flower then. So, just thought I'd make those, I hope you didn't mind me asking you about the sight. I just wondered.
I was stung too once, Deborah. I know that.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Trish, who's next, if anybody?
We don't have anyone at the moment.
All right. Just feel free to let us know when that changes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Diana, have you been playing with ChatGPT at all?
For what exactly?
The artificial intelligence, ChatGPT. Have you been experimenting with it at all?
Like, in general?
Yeah, in general.
Yeah, I'd say I do experiment with it a little.
Have you tried to draw using ChatGPT?
You can generate pictures, but I'm just saying all the images in Crazy Critters are drawn by me. There was no AI used at all. So right,
and I understand that, and that's terrific. The reason I'm asking is I'm just beginning to play with it, and it's amazing. Of course, I cannot draw anything, but you can describe the contours of what you're looking for, and it'll come up with something. It's really kind of interesting. I mean, I will never, it'll never be the same as actually drawing a picture, but it will do some pretty amazing things.
Yeah.
What do you use ChatGPT for? What have you been doing with it? How have you been experimenting with it?
So if I want to do character designs, I will let it help me, but I don't want to let AI consume me too much. Or if I have like very specific questions, I'll go to ChatGPT, but I'm careful not to use it that much unless I really need it.
And that's really good. That's as it should be. But I think that, you know, the whole thing is this whole ChatGPT thing is going to get more and more intrusive and important as time goes by. So I'm glad, but that's, I think you're doing the right thing is using it as a resource and not doing the work for you.
Okay. And we do have another hand.
Okay.
Alice, go ahead.
Hi, Alice.
Hi. Thank you very much. And I'm certainly enjoying your presentation. I'm wondering, I know Leonore said that you, she made mention of page 48, and I'm wondering how many pages are in your book, and also what are the target ages for readers of your book? I'm sure many ages would enjoy it, but as far as children are concerned, what are the general ages that you would think appropriate for your book? And thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd say the proper age range is about 8 to 12 years old because there's a lot of content, but the art style is quite childish, as Miss Leonore said before. And the book, I think it's more than 50 pages. I think it's about 53 or 52 pages. Am I right about that?
Diana, it's 51 pages.
51.
I'm counting the about the author part, which is just one page. The book itself, the text itself is 49 pages long.
Yes. Okay.
And the actual amount of text is pretty small. As you said, Diana, it's really the pictures that make the book, you know, and your talent and bringing life to these arthropods, is really what makes the book work.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I think when I first got the document for it, when I wrote the text, I think it was only about like maybe 2 pages long.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. But yeah, the drawings took me a long time. I think of each drawing taking me about like 20 minutes to 1 hour.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. And I just want to tell people there's as little text as on a couple of pages. There's only like one word. And then sometimes there are 3 or 4 lines or something. The pages that have the most text have no more than about 8 or 10 lines of text. But the majority, the huge majority of the space is taken up with illustrations.
And I think, for folks like me who have been blind since birth, the pictures don't mean all that much, but for most people, sighted folk, that's a big deal. It's such, terrific pictures. And, I hope that people with kids will buy the book and enjoy it.
Deanna, are you going to consider making a career out of being an author? Do you have anything else that you're thinking about writing?
So I want to kind of transition from silly children's books to maybe something more serious, like a memoir. But I want to have a role in like leadership or politics with being an author on the side, but mostly like something in leadership. But I can have like, I can be an author for, you know, more travel.
So how are you developing yourself as a leader these days or a politician?
Okay, well, maybe the politician is a bit of a stretch, but right now, for my job, I'm an intern at a camp. I guess I'm a camp counselor, and there are 3 pods for the kids at the camp. So as a camp counselor, it is my job, along with 2 other girls, to manage 18 kids, and we have to basically stay with them for around 7.5 hours and stay for another 30 minutes at the job facility for meetings. And we have to basically do everything with these kids. It can be leading games, doing the dancing or choreo with them, because they are doing a play over the summer. So we are helping them read their lines. We are helping them do the dances. We are helping them do everything they can possibly do to have the best performance ever. So I think this one job will maybe help me get over my anxiety and become more of a leader, hopefully.
Where is the camp located?
The camp? So the place I'm going to, it's at the Church of Our Savior in Brookline.
In Massachusetts?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And are you considering running for office or being part of the student council or something at school?
The student council? Oh, yeah, maybe I will. Perhaps I will. But usually within my friend groups, I'm usually the social one. I like to take charge and stuff. So I think it'll be baby steps.
Sure.
Before I can.
I was going to say being social is a big part of running for office or running for a position on the student council or whatever you want to do like that.
Yeah, you have to have some degree of social. And yeah, no, it's true. You have to be able to shake hands and all those kinds of good things, which is why I don't particularly enjoy being a politician. It's way too much work for me. So when is this play, when is the play being performed?
So the one I'm doing, there are two sessions. In each session, there will be a play. So I'm pretty sure this play is being rehearsed Friday of next week. And then for the second session, I will only be able to be there for 1 week. So I don't know when the next play is going to be rehearsed. But the most recent one will be performed by the very end of next week.
Okay. And you think that the kids are ready?
I believe in them. I believe in my pod, my group at least, but I think they've worked really hard. I'm really proud of their efforts. Yeah, I did the best I could to get them up and running.
That's great work. I remember I was part of a play when I was younger, and it's great. So you're going to be a freshman next year?
A sophomore.
Sophomore. And what courses are you planning to take?
So there's a lot of classes, I think maybe about 8. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but I think I'm taking integrated wellness, some sort of painting class, I think yoga along with like, there's this optional class you can take. I think it's about leadership as well. You can take it for extra credit. So those are my electives. And mm-hmm. for my academic classes, I guess, I'm taking mostly honors. So yeah. Got that.
So the audience may know that Diana's father is from Iran and came over here a while ago. Have you been to Iran before, Diana?
Yes, multiple times.
And what is your impression of Iran?
I really like the country. I really like the culture. I'm fully Iranian genetically, so I feel kind of connected to my country. I think the culture is very beautiful and the heritage overall.
What makes your culture, the Iranian culture, beautiful? What do you like about it?
I really like how poetic we speak. For example, we have a phrase called that's Gorbanet Beshaman, which literally translates to, I will die for you, or I will make sacrifices for you. And it is used in casual conversation between family and friends in Iran, but they don't actually mean they will die for the other person, rather that they love them so much. So if you've heard of poets like Hafiz, Rumi, Ferdowsi, those basically inspired, like, I guess, poetic references in daily language between Iranians. So, yeah, I think the language is very beautiful. And the food, too.
And I gather you speak it fluently. Was it Farsi?
Pretty fluently. Maybe not as much as my dad. But I'm learning to read and write in Persian, too, because I want to really be connected to my mother, basically.
Farsi has left the meeting.
Good for you. I'm glad you're doing that. Do you have any thoughts about when you get older, what you might do with Iran? You might, you're going to continue to visit. How do you think you'll stay connected with Iran as you get older?
Oh, I really don't want to lose that connection. I might just move there maybe live there for a little bit so I can like really see what it's like. Cause I've only been visiting I'm pretty sure 2-year intervals, which is kind of sad, but I think I might want to live there for a bit, see how it's like to have a job and, you know, like having the same life I would have here, just in Iran with my...
Have you made friends in Iran, kids that you, you know, your age, that you keep in touch with?
The funny thing is a lot of the people there are either like fetuses compared to me or maybe at least 30 years older than me. But there's a neighbor close to my uncle's house, which is usually where I stay whenever I travel to Iran. She is about, I think, 14 or 15, which is around my age. And we would usually meet up and I would usually talk to her. Again, there are my cousins, but they are younger than me as well. But mm-hmm. I think I'd have a lot more friends in Iran if I...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that last sentence again, if you can, Deanna. What did you say about your friends in Iran?
I was just saying if I had lived in Iran, I would have made way more friends there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it. Good. And what would you, what do you think is important for us who have never been to Iran? You know, Iran is not, in general, is not treated very nicely in our media. What would you, what message would you want us to hear about Iran? Since you're over there quite regularly.
Well, I just want, you know, I'm pretty sure you know, but Iran is not an Arab country. They're very, different from Arabs. We are very different from Arabs, and it is not really, our government is not exactly a theocracy. It's kind of a unique blend of a presidential system and a theocracy, but that's kind of just the political stuff. And most importantly, it's definitely not as bad as you think it is. I mean, I haven't lived there, but if you search Iran travel vlogs, hopefully most of the things you see are positive. So it's not really, it's not like Afghanistan. And it's not like those unsafe places they show you. I promise you won't get kidnapped if you go to like Tehran.
My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, it's much more religious and more conservative in the rural parts of Iran than in places like Tehran. Is that, from your experience, does that make sense?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. Times may have changed, but I think my dad, who grew up in the villages of Iran would know that. They were very, very like, they held traditional Muslim values. But yeah, you are correct. The rural areas, religion is very important. Like Qom, which is a religious city in Iran, they value religion a lot.
So, are you Muslim here? Do you practice the religion, Islam here?
So our parents are like reformative Islam, but I would say I am agnostic. I guess you could say I am culturally Muslim because Islam is very deeply embedded into Persian culture, but I'm not really Muslim. I'm more agnostic, although my parents are reformative Muslim. Yes.
So when you say reformative, that means to me that they're more, progressive or they're more, liberal. They're Muslim, but they're not conservative Muslims. Does that sound right?
Yes. So my mom prays. And my dad, he's learned a lot from Islam. I think we have a Quran in our house, but I'm just saying my mom doesn't wear a hijab here, and nor do I. And I don't think it's really required for women under 30 in Iran, thankfully. Yes. If you, search up, videos in Iran, you'll see most women have like a small hat on or they are not wearing a hijab at all. So we are not really like that strict when it comes to Islam.
What was that word that you were using? Pronounce that word again. Hijab.
Hijab.
Oh.
And that's the covering that some Muslims wear when they're out. You know, they cover their hair and their head, as I understand it. I would imagine that what's been going on over there over the past, 2 months has been kind of scary in Iran.
In Iran. Yeah. Well, I don't really necessarily have any news, but, there's been like, there was an armed conflict with Israel, unfortunately. So that was also very scary. But luckily my family is safe from that. And I guess a month before, I don't remember that much, but, yeah, unfortunately, Iran usually seems to be in the center of many conflicts, even though they weren't really instigated by the country itself. But I think I don't think the best time to travel there is right now. I'd say wait a little bit if you ever. Yeah.
Probably not. All right. When do you plan? Do you have any idea when you might go back?
Like in a year.
Okay. Okay.
I heard that there are some airlines that, and Jay, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say something about some airlines, even European airlines, that can't go there right now? They can't go to Iran at this time?
Sorry to interrupt, guys. Real quick, we lost Patricia, but we have just under 10 minutes, and we do have a raised hand or two.
Oh,
Let's bring him on. Who do we have?
And before that, though, Jay, do you want to respond to that question that Bob had about airlines?
Quickly.
Yeah.
Right, quickly. Because since the war and the area is rather not settled yet, most European airlines are not flying to Persian Gulf area at all. I know that Turkish airlines start going and the Iranian airline, but all the other airlines, they are holding right now, but they'll make the announcement toward the end of the month.
All right. Who do we have, Herbie?
We've got Deborah. Make it quick.
Go ahead, Deborah.
I think my hand was still raised.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Thank you anyway. We'll move right along.
Herbie?
We do not have any other raised hands.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, if anybody wants to raise their hand for the next 8 minutes or whatever it is.
I'll let you know, yes.
Yeah.
We had to do a slight changing of the guard, so.
Yeah, I was, I'm glad you're here. I hope, Trish is okay.
Her internet went, so she's perfectly fine. So,
oh, yeah,
anyway.
Sure.
That's one of the hazards of Zoom.
Yeah, the hazards of the, well, I don't get me started about the internet here, but that's another conversation. What extracurricular activities are you doing at school? Are you involved with sports or music or dance or what are you doing at school when you aren't studying honors courses?
Well, last spring I was a part of the outdoor track team, the girls outdoor track team, although I wasn't really that good at it. So I'm thinking I might not have time to do that many extracurriculars or sports because I'm taking presumably difficult classes along with electives. So hopefully I want to get a few more extracurriculars and perhaps like another internship when I'm 16. So I'm doing my best.
We have a lot of confidence in you, Deanna. You seem very determined and you know what you want to do, and that's great.
What do you do to relax?
Okay. I guess we're throwing in last minute questions. What do I do to relax? Well, I guess I don't really like relaxing. I'm kind of like I kind of have the up and grind mindset, but if I really want to relax, like before bed, I just think about, someone I really like or my memories in Iran or something that fills me with joy if I want to relax for.
And what fills you with joy these days?
Well, I kind of form ridiculous attachments to a few things, like maybe shows or memories I've had in the past. But I think drawing as well makes me feel joy because drawing is kind of the one thing, like that people kind of recognize me for. Like I was kind of the artsy kid, in middle school. So I think drawing fills me with joy. Anything that reminds me of the good people I have in my life and the good memories.
We have about another minute or so. So I was wondering if you had any final thoughts for our listeners as we move forward.
And let's plug the book again. Where can people get the book? And who is it? You know, just give us a summary of the book and what it is and who it's written for and how you can get it.
Okay. So you can get it at Amazon.com. Just search Crazy Critters World of Centipedes. You can get it in the Kindle form or delivered to you. The age range is generally 8 to 12, so if you have any little ones, I'd recommend it. You buy it for them. And then you can go to my official website, which I believe Miss Leonard told you about. It was DLD Books.
www.dldbooks.com/DMortazavi. And that would be the letter D and then MORTAZAVI.
Yes.
Slash.
Well, and keep us posted on what you're doing. And if you do write another book, a memoir or whatever, let us know and we will bring you back when that project is done.
And I have the feeling that you're going to do a lot more, Deanna. I have a lot of faith in you. So good luck and thank you for being with us on In Perspective today.
Thank you.
And Jay, you should be proud of your daughter. She's terrific.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. And you guys are terrific. Yeah, we are definitely proud of her and she's a very hardworking girl. And but she wants to become a politician because I talk about politics all the time. So she knows a lot about politics. It's unbelievable for her age.
She has a good
teacher.
But
of course, as you said, that will be another topic.
Yes, and we have to bring this to an end.
Okay, she has a good teacher. And thank you, everybody. And go safe with God's abundant blessings. We'll see you next week on In Perspective. Bye now.
Thanks.